Welcome everybody to another episode of Yankees and Gravy. I'm your host, Tommy Casabona. We're talking Yankee baseball, all things Yankee baseball, opinions, news, game-by-game analysis, player analysis, a little bit of gravy, some off-topic stuff as well. I appreciate you tuning in. It is August 1st, 2015. You believe we got a new month. Summer is almost over. Ugh, it's crazy. Goes so fast. This summer went really... What summer doesn't go fast? When's the last time you heard of anybody saying, wow, you know, this summer's taken forever. Can't wait to get into the fall and winter. Actually, I guess a little bit, you know, those big-time football fans might say something like that. Either way, as usual, I would like to invite you guys to check me out. The main website this podcast is recorded on and delivered to you is by Podomatic.com. Through Podomatic.com, you can check and search for Yankees and Gravy. You could also go to iTunes, find Yankees and Gravy. You could do that through Podomatic.com, actually. If you go to Podomatic.com, you'll see the little link where you could subscribe. Best way to do it is on your phone, though. I've told you guys this before. Download the podcast app. When you do that, search for Yankees and Gravy and subscribe, and you will have a fresh pot of gravy in your phone, ready for your commute to get you through that subway ride or that long drive home in traffic, whatever it is. Or, you know, for some people, I think maybe even to put you to sleep at night, you know, whatever. I don't know. If you're not into the Yankees, that might be the route to go, because otherwise this podcast would be very, very boring to you. Let's get right into it this week. Let's not screw around at all. Yeah, yesterday's game, man, whew. It's like murderer's row out there sometimes. When we are hitting, when we're hitting, we're hitting. And there is nobody that's going to stop us. We are friggin' just unstoppable. Evaldi looked pretty strong early as well. You know, he's not perfect. He's never going to be perfect. He hit 100. Yeah, I love that, man. I never understand how a guy can throw the ball 100 miles per hour and not be a household name, you know, a star in the league. But I guess that's how it is now. Everybody throws 100 miles per hour, not 100, but high 90s is not what it once used to be. You had a guy that threw 98. That was a special, special guy. Nowadays, a lot of relievers do, and you need guys to throw 98. It's crazy. Just evolution, I guess, right? What else? He could, you know, the truth of it is, he could end up being our ace, and that's scary. We'll talk more about the pitching a little later, but, I mean, look at it right now. We don't necessarily, you look at these lines on these guys, we don't have an ace. We don't have that guy. We don't have a shutdown guy. And we'll talk more about the deadline stuff and whether it was the right move to not make a move and stand pat or not. That's going to remain to be seen. But you already got Pineda on the DL. Who knows? You'd like to see that he's going to be back, and everybody says he will be back. But he's hurt. The guy's hurt right now. All I know is Michael Pineda is not pitching for the New York Yankees right now. He's hurt. And he's been known to spend excessive times on the DL. Of course, it's just a forearm strain right now. That's what they're saying. I'm sure it's true. But who knows what that could lead to? Who knows if he's going to come back at full strength? Obviously, I'm not trying to be an alarmist, but I'm seeming like an alarmist. But again, when you want to talk about having an ace, a guy you could write down, like you're writing down Harvey and DeGrom on the Mets, Yankees do not have that. Tanaka is definitely not pitching like an ace. He has the ability to. He has at times pitched like an ace, but he's not pitching like an ace right now. So bottom line is those are our two main guys. We don't have an ace. We're hanging on by a thread with this Tanaka thing, and we stopped holding our breath, I guess, but remember, all through the beginning of the year, we were wondering if this guy was going to be able to pitch through the whole year. So far, we've been lucky. This is not wood, but I'm knocking anyway. Hopefully, this guy does not get hurt, and hopefully he pitches at least as good as he's been pitching through the year. But like I said, still, there's no ace. I don't know. CC, what are you going to do? I mean, I'm not going to go through the rotation. We've done that before. Nothing's changed. I'm just saying we really could have used a pitcher is really what I'm saying. On the positive note, how hot is Mark Teixeira? What a beast this guy has been. Are you kidding me? The guy is just, I mean, he hit four home runs in the last 2 days. He had six RBIs yesterday. He's in the conversation for MVP. As Jack Curry just said, I heard him say it on Yes. He's not going to win the MVP. You got Mike Trout in the same league, and, you know, it's stats are better right now, and but the reality of it is that Texas having a unbelievable 2015, and you got to love it because, again, he's another one. You know, he's not as old as A-Rod, but he's been hurt, and he hasn't been to the level he used to be. The batting average will never return. We already know about that. The shift has ruined his batting average forever because this guy used to be a guy that's a 300 hitter. He's not a 300 hitter anymore. But what you look at, he's still, and this probably fuels his home runs and why he's able to hit home runs besides having the sweetest left-handed swing. Righty swing's nice too, but the left-handed swing he has is the prettiest swing in baseball. Go look it up, I promise. But what he's doing now and what he's always done his whole career, he's doing an exceptional job of it now, is just being so selective at the plate. The guy has, I don't know, what does he have? I think he has like 60 strikeouts. For a power hitter to have 60 strikeouts this deep into the season, and he's got a lot of walks too, and you can just watch him. When you watch him hit, he takes strikes knowing, and you could tell he knows full well he's taking a strike. But you know what? It's not his pitch. He wants another one. He wants a better one. He's a professional hitter. He can have the comp. When I was a hitter, that was a different story. I used to hate when I used to get the first pitch take sign because I want all my strikes. I was a loose wild swinger. I didn't like, if I saw a pitch I liked, I wanted a shot at it. comparing myself to Tex, a little wacky, but I'm just comparing the mindset is what I'm comparing. So Tex is able to fully be happy to take a strike, knowing it's not directly in his wheelhouse, having the confidence in himself as a hitter to know that, you know what, I'm gonna wait that one out. It's a strike, yeah, but I'm gonna wait that one out, and hopefully I get a better one. So, cheers to Tex, and we got paid. Nobody's talking about that. I guess he did himself the biggest favor because people that probably would have had a little bit more legs than when he embarrassed the third base coach the other night, basically piled on after the game in the post-game press conference. People divided on that. I think most people would agree that he probably should have done that indoors. But what's the best thing to do? Same thing with A-Rod. All the controversy around him. What you're in the midst of a non-baseball related or an off-the-field, I guess, controversy. I mean, it's not barely a controversy, but what's the best thing to do is just get on the field and bang. And Mark Teixeira is just absolutely doing that. You can't be more happy. You can't be happier. Didi Gregorius. He's actually, I said the other podcast, he still doesn't make spectacular plays. I think making spectacular plays a lot of times comes with confidence and playing with that reckless abandon and just letting your, you want to call it training. I mean, your just natural ability and just knowing that you're good, you know you're good. So you just have a fluidity out there that you play with. And Didi, for the first time, I'm starting to see that he actually did make a borderline spectacular play last night when he charged in and he did one of those, charging in full speed, glove it, throw it, one motion. That was slick. That was smooth, man. Didi definitely, you just look at his eyes too, man. He looks like he's getting a little more confident. The hitting with both these guys. Think about Tex. I mean, think about Didi and Headley. They're replacing an all-time left side of an infield when you're looking at Jeter and A-Rod. So, I mean, is it, you like to think these guys are professionals and nothing affects them mentally, but was that in their head at all? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe not. But it seems like with both these guys, one fuels the other. When they're not hitting, they're also not fielding. When they start hitting, the fielding gets better because, I don't know, I guess it's just a testament of what kind of game baseball is. It's just such a confidence game. And these guys are looking good. Wanted to talk about the lineup as a whole. Guys, are you seeing what's going on here with this baseball lineup, the Yankee lineup? It's out of control right now. I'm not trying to, pat ourselves on the back too much. I don't want to get cocky. I am a realistic Yankee fan. I try to be as much as possible. But you're looking at the balance you're talking about. It was always good to have the pair of twins. I guess you had Joe Ellsbury and Gardner, one pair of twins, and then A-Rod and Tex, the other pair of twins. You have that, you can win games. You're going to score runs, no matter what the hell the rest of your lineup looks like. But look what's going on right now. first of all, McCann's been solid all year. He's had a way, way, way better year than this year than he had last year, and you gotta love it. You gotta love what McCann's doing. Now you're gonna tell me Didi Gregorius and Headley are gonna basically hit at the level they're hitting. They'll probably drop off a little bit, but if they hit the way anywhere close to where they're hitting, they're gonna be in the 270 range. And, you know, which stretches where they're just basically like Didi the other night, you couldn't get him out. Headley's looked much better. Beltran is looking way, way better too. And you got the one hole. Second base is the only hole. When you put this together, you got two on-base guys that are just prototypical on-base guys with a little power, good average guys, can, you know, cause destruction on the base paths. And then you got the two bangers that can also hit. I mean, Tex is hitting again too. I think he was hitting like 245 or whatever, but he's gotten closer to that 260 mark. A-Rod's hitting 400 in his last, you know, I don't know what, 2 weeks or so. These guys, you can't, where do you run? There's nowhere to run, there's nowhere to hide. These guys are hitting very, very well. So, and honestly, the way the pitching is, we're going to need every bit of it. So enjoy this, guys, while you got such a lineup out there. It's not necessarily, you don't have the all-time, of course, you know, like I said in the last podcast, it's not as, I guess, dominant and imposing, like when you have, but the balance that we have in this lineup, and you get a couple of meshes in A-Rod and Tex, and then the overall balance you have, 1-9, you're talking about a really, still, even with all these runs we're scoring, still underrated. This is a great, great, great Yankee lineup. So, good news. What are we worried about still? You know, I always, you know, being the Yankee fan and being the, you know, I guess, not pessimist, but what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. But, you know, you wonder when the other shoe's going to drop. They just see they hit freaking 22 runs the other night, you know, 15 runs last night. They just seem to be able to be, you can't get them out when they're on fire. And you just crossing your fingers, as unlucky as we've been the last 2 years, 2013, 2014, when we were running all those bums on the field, you know, all those has-beens that, you know, if they did put together a good year, we had a shot, but chances are they wouldn't. You know, you got the clown, you got, you know, Swisher in the mix. You have a different culture on this team. It feels like, you know, A.J. Burnett was a clown too. You liked it a little bit because it kept it loose a little bit, and you kind of wanted that. But I do like the fact that we are a business-like team that also does, you know, we're not a boring team. Like, these guys like each other. You could tell when certain guys do walk-offs and, you know, certain guys get big hits. You could tell how pumped they are for each other. So The only thing that's going to hurt us offensively is if somebody's going to go down. Is somebody going to go down? Man, if history repeats itself, we'll probably lose at least one guy. You know, I hate to say it. This is the knocking again, not on wood, and, you know, whatever. But all we got to do is stay healthy with this lineup. If we can find a way to stay healthy for two more freaking months, and then, you know, two more months, and then into the third month where the playoffs start, we're going to have a good run. They're not catching us in the division. You got to worry about the pitching when it comes to the playoffs, though, because you can win during the regular season by just bashing the shit out of people. But in the postseason, if you want to be the real deal in the postseason, you got to have two or three solid, reliable guys above average. What else? What are we going through here? Trade deadline. What could have been? What could have happened? What was close to happening from the Yankees' standpoint? Basically, the answer to that is nothing. The only, I guess, as far as the top line guys, you know, the major different, I know we got Ackley, but who cares? The major guys we're talking about, we did put in an offer to San Diego for Kimbrel. And we didn't get, the phone call didn't get returned. So what does that tell you? It just didn't get taken seriously. Cashman put it out there through whatever leak it was, is that, you know, we made a offer to the Padres. I guess it was the night before the last day of the deadline. And they didn't get back to him, and it was like 11, 12 hours went by. Nobody got back to him. So I guess they were just busy either talking to other teams or, you know, deciding to stand pat. And they did give a courtesy call back to Cashman and say that we did not accept your offer, but thank you. Didn't happen. So Kimbrel wasn't really taken serious. You heard a couple of things about Chapman. That was a no-go. I don't care that we didn't get one of the two relievers. I really did want a starter. We knew we weren't going to get any of the aces. Me personally, I probably would tell you that I would have traded Severino for Price. As much as I love Severino, I'm going to root for Severino. We're going to do a piece on Severino at the end of this thing and really kind of try to dive in and get to know him a little bit and his body of work so far because he's in the mix. But I still would have done it. You're talking about a guy who could be a one or two guy. They're saying his upside is probably a strong number two. His bottom is a very, very good reliever, middle reliever or whatever. I think he's dealing with a serious, serious talent here. But Price is a freaking stud. Price is that guy that you could plug in and that you know everything's okay when he's on the mound, except when he pitches against the Yankees because we kill him. But, you know, that problem is basically removed. So nothing happened. We got this guy, so I wanted to touch on what I thought we should have done. You know, like I said, before Pineda went down, I was like, you know what, if we're not going to get an ace, we can't do anything. Since Pineda did go down, now that changes the game. Now you could use a mid-level guy. The guy Mike Leake would have been a perfect guy from the Reds. He would have been a perfect guy to get because we probably wouldn't have. And how funny is it? These guys have nicknames now. These four prospects who have not done a thing in the major leagues, have not played in the major leagues, have, we've become so obsessed with society to label everything and everybody and give things titles and memes and everything. Saw a few memes. These four guys... Mateo, Severino, who else? Judge and Bird. They're labeled the untouchables. That's pretty funny. So you didn't have to give away an untouchable. You don't want to give away one of the untouchables. I don't know why Ref Snyder fell off and Sanchez fell off. Those were two guys too. So Yankees got six solid prospects right now that you're probably going to be seeing a lot of them in the coming years. But either way, so we didn't get anybody. We really could have used a mid-level guy once Pineda went down because we do need another innings eater. And Severino's not the guy. They're bringing up Severino. Like I said, we'll talk about him a little bit more later. But you know they're going to be careful with him. So we'll see what happens. He's going to give us a little bit of – knowing the Yankees like they did Ref Snyder, he'll pitch a shutout and then they'll send him back down. But we'll see, I guess. The move we did make, Dustin Ackley. I don't get it. He was the second overall pick in 2009. Now, the draft in baseball, everybody knows, is a crapshoot. You don't know. The guy in baseball, there's such a journey to get to the top. You never know if anybody is going to be is going to live up to how highly touted they are. And Ackley certainly has not. He got taken with the second overall pick in 2009. He hasn't had an OPS over 1700. You know what OPS is, and I hate the sabermetric stats or whatever, but it's on-base percentage and slugging percentage. I don't hate that one. That one's not a bad one. On-base and slug added with slugging percentage. A lot of you guys shut up. I know you're veterans out there listening. Yeah, we know what the fuck it is. We get it. You can move on. Whatever. Some people don't know. Some people are old like me, and they don't necessarily follow these new stats that came out over the last couple of years as closely. So. He's never had over 700. That's ridiculous. Since 2011, he's been on a pretty much a decline. He ranges between a 220 and 240 hitter. This year, career low 215. He's got a 270 on base percentage this year. Now, I guess I don't know what we're thinking. Yes, he's played second base, but he hasn't played second base this year, so he's not used to the position. He's also an outfielder. He can play most outfield positions. I don't understand why we got rid of Garrett Jones for this guy. You're talking about a team. Everybody talks about the team chemistry. Everybody talks about how well the team gets along and how much these guys love each other. Now, that only means so much as well. I'm not saying you don't ever freaking trade somebody because everybody's friends. No. But when you got good chemistry and the team chemistry is part of the strength of your team, why do you change it for this? Change it for somebody who's going to give you 25 home runs. Change it for somebody that you know you could plug out into the starting rotation every fifth day, and he can give you six innings and two runs. You know what I mean? Why upset the chemistry for this guy? I think Cashman prides himself on these little baby moves where he just says, I want to incrementally, you know, they're not always going to be sexy, but I'm going to incrementally get better at certain positions. His favorite word, again, he used. His favorite freaking word. Oh, we think there's upside. We think this guy. Now, I'm going to stop myself for a second. If this guy hits freaking two home runs in the first week he's here and then starts jumping up and down at the plate because he's got a couple of walk-offs and is diving all over the field making plays, what do you want me to tell you? I was wrong, and I'm jumping on. And Dustin Hackley, I will be the biggest fan you have. But I'm analyzing right now as, whatever. I'm trying to give my opinion on what I thought right after the trade. So, yes, I will absolutely be a hypocrite if this guy does well. But I don't know. Cashman's just going on and on about this guy's upside and how he's got a Yankee Stadium swing and how he probably needs a change, all these freaking things. So it's like Girardi when Girardi says, oh, you know what, he's hitting 140, but he's hitting the ball really hard at people. You know, he's much better than his batting average shows. No, Bill Parcells had it right. You are what your record says you are. That's what it is. And you know what, you want to use that for a couple of weeks, or you want to use that for like a, you know, a sample size of maybe like, you know, 7 to 10 days, that's fine. But when we're halfway, you know, two-thirds of the way through the year and the guy's still hitting 177, no, you are what your record says you are, period. That's the end of story. So that's what I felt about as far as the chemistry risk. And, you know, I would not have made the Dustin Hackley move. Okay, so let's talk about Luis Severino. As you guys know, the Yankees called up Luis Severino. It's been made known that he is slated to start next Wednesday, between Tanaka and CC. So it'll be Tanaka on Tuesday, CC on Thursday. Now, CC was in the hospital. We talked about that the last podcast. He was in the hospital for dehydration. You know, the guy's 6'8", 320 pounds in that Texas heat, throwing all those pitches. You got to imagine, you know, if he's not hydrated properly, you know, that's not a shocker. That's not a, oh, I can't believe, you know, this 300-pound guy, you know, got dehydrated in Texas. They say he's fine now. He hasn't done a bullpen yet, and they expect him to do a bullpen in the next couple of days. Once he sees that, he will officially be named the Thursday starter. But as of right now, they're saying there's no reason why they don't expect him to be the starter for that Thursday game. All right, let's get back into it. Luis Severino, he is here. This is the guy that we kept. This is the guy that we did not trade anybody for. We have a championship caliber team on the field right now playing in Chicago. This is a team that could win the World Series with the right things breaking our way and maybe the right move or two. And we did not take that next level step. We did not go out and get a superstar because we and basically risking our chances of winning the World Series this year because of this guy. And I don't say that to say we should have, even though I probably think we should have. But I'm not saying that to say that we should have. I'm saying that to say this is how highly the Yankees think of a one Luis Severino. He is a Dominican right-hander. He was born February 20th, 1994. That makes him 21. His height is 6 foot, and he weighs 195 pounds. So very young. At 21 years old, I don't think he's going to get any taller, but he definitely could fill out and work his way into that 210-pound frame, which I think would probably help him out because, you know, 6 foot, 195 pounds, walking the streets is a pretty decent-sized guy. But as a major league, big league hurler, it's actually considered fairly slight. Recognized as the top prospect in the Yankees organization, not only by the New York Yankees, but by Baseball America, Americana, whatever the hell they call themselves, and a bunch of other people. Most scouts say this is the guy in the organization, you know, right up there with Judge. But this basically, when it comes to pitching, I guess that takes that puts him over the top. He is the number one prospect in the Yankees organization, and I say he's not a prospect anymore. I say you remove the prospect from his name because he's officially in the big league. The prospect means you should one day be able to do something. You know, you're in the big leagues now, Louis. So the time is now. You are no longer a prospect in my book. You are a Yankee. He was signed. He was signed in 2012 as an international prospect. They gave him $225,000, and they let him start 14 games in the Dominican Summer League for the Dominican Summer League Yankees. He went 4-2. You say big deal, 4-2 in 14 games, but he did have a 1.68 ERA And probably the most astounding stat is 45 strikeouts. Actually, no, he did that next year. He had 45 strikeouts and 64 and a third innings, which is very, very good. So that's his first year. 2002, he spent the whole year with the Dominican Summer League Yankees, and that's what he did. So 2013 rolls around. Started off the year with the same exact team. He very quickly got promoted to the Charleston River Dogs. They're a Class A team, obviously, in Charleston. The River Dogs. I love the minor league team names. Do that. Let's do that at Yankees and Gravy. YankeesandGravy@gmail.com. Some of these minor league names, the River Rats, the Mud Hens, it's some of these backwoods and a lot of them are like, the Carolinas and Tennessees. And it's funny the names that they come up with, but these are the Charleston River Dogs. He went 4-2, also in 10 games. He had 54 strikeouts and 44 innings. So this is a guy who, it's a Class A. You're starting to open your eyes a little bit with this guy. You're like, hold on, we got something here. So that's 2013. 2014, he started the year in Charleston. But then that's a Class A. But he went up to a higher level of Class A, which is Tampa. So it's a Class A, High A, A plus, whatever you want to call it. Tampa pitched there for a little while, and then even got promoted again to Double A Trenton. So he basically was in played for three teams. So he played for the Tampa, then Trenton. No, I'm sorry, Charleston, Tampa, and Trenton. So for the year, we're not going to go break down each freaking stop. But for the year, he went 6-5 with a 2.46 ERA, 127 walks, strikeouts in 113 innings. So that's phenomenal. The ERA is a little bit higher. You're playing with guys that are freaking 5 years older than you and have experience. So they made an adjustment. You make adjustment back. 2.46 is still way more than respectable. And 127 strikeouts and 113 innings pitched. That's borderline beastly. 27 walks in 24 games. It's not bad at all. Like I said, 113 innings. That was 2014. And 2015, he basically, what did he do? He started at Double A, but then he got called up to Triple A. And in Triple A, he's 7-0. With a 1-point-something ERA. I didn't have that written down, but I did see it. They flashed it on the screen yesterday. And he's looking good, man. The guy looks good. He's described as having an electric arm. He can play catch at 95 miles an hour. So he's very, very comfortable with a natural motion that could hit 95, no problem whatsoever. And they say when he does get in a little bit of a bind, when it's two strikes, when he wants to ratchet it up a little bit, he can hit 97 or 98. He's got very good command, they say, too. He hits both sides of the plate. He can do it at any time. And it's a lively fastball as well. It kind of tails down and in on righties and sails away from lefties. So this guy's got a live arm. The guy can do a lot of things. The fastball is dynamic. It just sounds like this guy lives on his fastball right now, something CeCe Sabathia used to be able to do, but can't do it anymore. But CeCe Sabathia was a great pitcher. He was dominant. He had a good curveball. You know CeCe. CeCe was good. Still is. When I say CeCe was good, I mean he still is in the league, but he's not good. So I don't know why I'm letting myself get into this little tailwind regarding CeCe Sabathia. We're going to clean this stuff up, guys. You know what I'm saying? I told you. I'm not a professional. I'm going to stop saying that too. Guys, all in all, I'm going to get better each week. Every time I do something I know is stupid, I know I don't like or I want to get better at, I make a mental note and I try not to repeat my mistakes. Not that you give a shit about any of that. But he's got a solid changeup as well. It comes from the same angle as his fastball. It's got a great sinking motion. It looks and it feels just like his fastball when it comes off. That's what a good changeup will do. Same angle, same everything. And they're saying it's pretty much, as far as a changeup, if you're going to grade the guy's changeup, it looks just as polished as his fastball, which is incredible. So if this guy got two pitches, definitely a 1-2 punch of a fastball and a changeup. He does have a slider. They're saying the slider is not on the same level as all the other pitches he has. His mechanics are a little bit different. When he throws it, it looks like he's kind of like slinging it rather than pitching it. And that's a tip off, so people can see when it's coming. But also because of that, he has less of an ability to kind of, I guess, control it. It's a little slower than a slider should be off of a fastball. That, if he could hit 97 on the gun, his slider comes in at like 85. And I don't really think that there should be that much of a disparity between the slider and a fastball. The slider to me should almost look like a fastball that, I mean, this guy's basically throwing a curveball, isn't he? I mean, 85 mile an hour slider at the at this level will probably find itself over many, many fences. And you know what? You can't even get mad at that. If that's going to happen a little bit and he's got to learn to make the adjustment, or hopefully some of these big league coaches like Rothschild or some of these other pitchers, the veterans get around him and help him out a little bit, he'll polish up the slider. But I don't see – 85 mile an hour slider is very pedestrian. That's just – that has danger written all over it. Maybe he should just work on turning it into a curveball and ditch the slider and just get a little bit more of a big break on it. But either way, we're nitpicking now. The concerns are that he's not the biggest, most burly guy. Like I said, 6 foot tall, 195 pounds. Well, that's, you know, solid, but it's not like, you know, you're not talking about Roger Clemens here or anybody like that. That wacky slider delivery that could possibly a durability concern, as well as this, I guess, you know, his size and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't know. You want to talk about a guy who's not too big. The last guy, I don't know the last guy, but one guy from the Dominican Republic who had a great year, and they just inducted into the Hall of Fame, Pedro Martinez. He didn't, you know, make a lot of money on being this overly dominant figure from a physical standpoint, but he was one of the baddest men ever to pick up a baseball and throw it. So I guess that's it. What else are we looking for with him? The other thing is, you know, you want to hear what the plans are for him, you know, because you know, in this day and age, pitchers are just babied all the time. And I don't even know if that's right or wrong. It is annoying, though. You can't deny that you could freaking get these guys up when they did it with Jabba, when they did it with Hughes. You want to see these guys pitch. And just, you know, 20 years ago, you never had a second thought about, you know, you just let them get out there and let them throw. But you know, that's why you still needed another pitcher. That's why you can't say, okay, I'll call up a Severino. No, because you know they're not going to let this guy throw 120 pitches. You know they're not going to let this guy start every game, you know, and go into the eighth, ninth inning every, you know, they're going to be very, very careful with him. So at all cost, they absolutely will sacrifice wins in order to preserve this guy, which I guess is smart, but of course it's smart. But the truth is that you still, that just speaks to as to why you just needed another pitcher, which you should have freaking went out and got, which I'm obviously having a hard time letting go of. So that's it. I mean, I guess that's it. I just wanted to do a quick one, come at you guys real quick. Oh, I did want to talk. I was just watching, I don't know if it was Yankeeography, but I was reporting the post game. I just caught the end of some highlights on Chris Chambliss. They were going over, and when I turned it on, they were going over that 1976 walk-off when they sent the Yankees into the World Series. Damn, every time, here we go. I know you're in your mind already, like, here he goes again. He's hearing Glory Days by Bruce Springsteen in the background, but whatever. Every time they freaking play any footage of the old Yankee Stadium, I stop dead in my tracks and I have to get a little taste of it. I got to take it in a little bit because that place was special. And that was special in my era when it was like, you know, late 80s, you know, mid 90s, early 2000s. Now, I mean, not now. I'm saying in the 70s, forget about it. Like that was when, I mean, you want to talk charm. Obviously, it's best that the city is not filled with drugs, crime, and murder, obviously. But there was a certain charm about that back then. You just see that freaking field. Somebody hit any big hit, any lunatic, drunk drug addict is liable to freaking run onto the field and do whatever they want to do. So Chambliss hits that home run, boom, and he's absolutely elated. He said multiple times, he wasn't the hugest power guy. He's like, I wasn't trying to hit a home run, but I just got a good piece of it and it went over the fence. When he started rounding those bases, and got attacked by those fans, I mean, the entire freaking stands ran onto the field. That's about as rare now as the bullpen car. Remember the bullpen car? I wish somebody would retro it out and freaking, you know, bring back the bullpen car. Funny story about the bullpen car. When Goose first came to the Yankees, he told the story about he was having a lot of trouble when he was kind of in the beginning when he was coming out, and he was supposed to be the closer, which the closer started in the seventh inning, which is another funny thing. But he was so bad. He was one of the newer Yankees. He took a lot of heat. And you look at Goose and you think of like this intimidating, freaking, you know, fierce competitor, but he was getting his ass kicked in the beginning. And he tells the story now laughingly, but they pulled the car, the Toyota, because that was the Yankee sponsor. They pulled the car to the bullpen, and they're bringing him in, and it's Goose in the car, and Mickey Rivers, I guess he had to be kidding, but he jumps on the hood of the car saying, no, don't bring him. I didn't see that happen. Goose describes it, and I'm getting that mental image in my head of Mickey Rivers jumping on the hood of a bullpen car, even though as half of you are wondering what the hell a freaking bullpen car is. But I miss the days of the bullpen car. But getting back to fans running on the field. Now you get run on the field, you get tased by freaking satellites from freaking who knows where. But so they're running on the field, and Chambliss is under siege now. Half the Yankees are under siege. Now they just want to get off the field, so they run off the field. And I want to tell you something. Watching the footage, go watch that. Watch the footage. And that's why running backs, I feel like, running backs in the NFL, I don't know if that's an actual skill as much as it is just, you know, you just got to be bigger, stronger, and faster and quicker, and that's it. And then give that guy the ball, and that's your guy. I don't know if there's an actual talent to being a running back, because really all it is, you watch Chris Chambliss get through that crowd. He was Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith, and Beast Mode all rolled into one. You could see traces of every one of those running backs in that freaking run off the field. He's dodging people. He's making cuts. The look in his eyes is that of desperation. I think that's what you got to be a good running back. You just got to be desperate, because what you're doing, you fight. It's almost like, there's just 11 people throwing their bodies at you to get you to the ground. And when you have that mentality, it's like, boom. It's like the adrenaline's going, and you're just, instinct is kicking in. Running back, is that's all it is, survival instinct. Just don't get tackled. Don't get tackled at any cost, and don't drop the ball. But he took his helmet off. Some guy took his helmet off, was trying to take his helmet off. So he took his helmet off and basically put the helmet in his freaking hand like a football. And go back and watch YouTube Chris Chambliss' home run and getting running off the field. And you will be absolutely impressed with the whole thing. And topped off, it's almost like the dugout was the end zone. One last guy got in his way, and he freaking beast-moded him. Forearm shivered and ran over him like Beast Mode and Earl Campbell. It was great. Really, really fun to watch, and a real, real kind of throwback to when New York was just filled with a bunch of nut jobs and lawlessness was at its prime. That was the Bronx Zoo. You know, the funny story with that is Artie Lang, if you guys are Howard Stern fans or, you know, just Artie Lang fans, stand-up comedy, acting, whatever, he tells the story. He was at one of the games. I don't know if it was that one. Now, Artie could be full of shit, because I definitely think he juices stories sometimes, but but it does speak to how New Yorkers were then. Artie's like 11 years old, something like that, and he tells his dad, his dad tells him, we're going to run on the field after the Yankees win. And he basically throws his kid, Artie Lang's dad, throws Artie onto the field when everybody starts running on the field. And being the good dad that Artie Lang's dad was, he's a very responsible parent, looked at him and said, son, whatever you do, run to shortstop. Amidst all the nut jobs, the crackheads, the lunatics, the looters, the whatever comes with New York City in 1976, of all the people who have the balls and the gumption to run out onto a baseball field where they're not supposed to, he throws his kid onto the field, and his last instructions are, I'll meet you out there. Meet me at shortstop, son. Like it's the freaking Titanic or something. Out of his hysterical story, and just a testament as to what New York was back then. The other thing he said, Chris Chambliss, getting back to him, fun fact, he rounded the bases and he never touched third base or home. And, you know, your survival instincts kick in and you get to the dugout. So now you're sitting in the dugout. You see all this mayhem going on, or you're in the clubhouse, wherever. It dawns on him that, you know what, hell, far be it from me to blow this by not stepping on the bases. He just barely got into the dugout by the skin of his teeth. And he realizes he has to score these runs. So he thinks in his mind, what if they get me for not touching the plate? So he grabs a couple of security guards and goes, we got to go back out there. I got to touch the plate. Security guards must have looked at him like, are you out of your mind? So he goes to walk out to touch the plate while, you know, escorted by the security guards. It's still bedlam out there. He goes to freaking touch home plate, and home plate's not there. It's gone. So I guess I don't know how that – I guess it would never be a thing anymore, because, you know, you don't really have massive amounts of humanity charging the field. But Interesting story. So baseball, Major League Baseball did, I guess, weigh the circumstances and forego, you know, enforcing the rule that you have to touch all bases, and the home run counted. And the Yankees went on to get their asses literally trampled by the Big Red Machine in a four-game sweep in that World Series. And then after that, they hired Billy Martin, watched the Bronx Zoo. ESPN series, it was okay. It's not a great series. You're not like, oh my God. Some of these sports movies, miniseries, whatever, you can watch them whether you're close to the situation or not, and really, really enjoy them. If I didn't like the Yankees, I wouldn't really be into this freaking the Bronx Zoo, that miniseries by ESPN. But because I was a big Yankee fan, I did treat it as sort of a documentary, and I did enjoy it. But that's it. The Bronx Zoo, ESPN. That's all I got. Good luck to the Yanks tonight, and good luck to Mr. Severino, and congratulations to Luis Severino for being the newest member of the New York Yankees. Please make us proud. Take us to the promised land. Go Yanks, and we will talk to you soon.